This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Dorothy Rowe is the author of the book The Real Meaning of Money. She writes the following words: "We work for it, we think about it, we dream about it, we want more of it. We spend it, we hoard it, we give it away. We scheme, lie, even kill for it. Some people say they think nothing of money, but they don't say that when they're homeless or starving. When people have got money, they despise it so they can feel virtuous, and feeling virtuous can be as important to us as being greedy. Money is power, money is comfort, security, contentment, freedom, just as it is imprisonment, filth, disgust, and degradation. Money binds us together and it splits us apart. It's a golden thread that knits us together, tentacles that strangle us, an explosive force that blasts us apart. It is common as dust and stranger than a will-o'-the-wisp." Dr. Dorothy Rowe is a psychologist and author, born in Australia and now living in England, and she's joined me from a home in London. Good morning, Dorothy.
Well, good morning to you. It's good evening here.
A common way of looking at money is that it's simply a form of exchange. X numbers of dollars or pounds is worth so much in goods, services, or labour. Do you find any merit to that straightforward way of looking at money?
Well, lots of people like to think about money in that way because it makes them feel secure. I'm sure all your listeners are aware we're in the midst of a rather bitter election here in Britain, and so money is very much to the fore in terms of whether there'll be more tax after whoever's elected and so on. But people assess money from their own position, and what are the things that they want out of life, and how they see themselves, so that we can say at this particular minute that amount of money will buy that amount of goods, but the value people place on that kind of statement is different for every individual.
So now, you talk extensively in The Real Meaning of Money about how people create a private logic about the meaning. So extending what you were saying just then, how do people actually go about creating those meanings?
Well, this is what human beings do. We are, in essence, meaning-creating creatures. That's what we do from about 25 weeks gestation, when we're still in the womb. Our cortex gets to a state of development where we start to make some kind of sense of what's going on. And, you know, we keep on doing that right through our life until our brain stops working. Of course, the sense we make isn't always terribly sensible, you know, if you're asleep and dreaming or drunk or even terribly tired. But we're always interpreting what's going on. And our interpretations can come from only one place, out of our past experience. So when it comes to interpreting money, we have to learn a set of public interpretations, you know, that this lump of metal is worth so much, but that other lump of metal is just has no value at all, or that this bit of paper or those numbers on a computer screen show that you're rich or not, as the case may be. So we have to learn the public interpretation of money, but we have our very private interpretation, which may not seem logical to other people, but it's logical to us.
Is that what you're referring to when you talk about the scaffold of meaning?
Yes. I've written, being a psychologist, I write about how people make meaning, and in each of my books I've taken a very important part of our life, our experience, and looked at it in terms of how we interpret, how we create meaning. And all the meanings we create coalesce into a kind of structure, and that's what we experience as our sense of being a person. It's what we call I, me, myself. And all of those meanings, that structure, that is us, and it's the most important part of our existence.
So now, do people in your experience understand or acknowledge the ways in which this private logic or structure of meaning shapes their relationship to money?
I don't think so, because if people understood this, I wouldn't spend all my time writing and books and articles to explain it and giving lectures and getting into discussions with people. It's very strange the way we... This is something we don't teach children. You know, in school we teach children all sorts of very complex things, you know, about... that those black marks on a piece of paper actually mean these words, or that those different marks means that you play these notes on the piano. But we don't teach children about how we create meaning. And I suspect that the reason we don't do that is because if you teach that, all you're doing is letting the person know that they cannot help but have their own way of seeing things, that no two people see things in exactly the same way. And of course, any child who's got the wisdom to realize that about themselves, well, such children are very difficult. You know, they will value their own opinions and they'll argue with adults. So lots of people grow up not understanding what they're doing every second of their lives.
And so this leaves us open to an emotion like fear. You say in your book that fear drives the market. Can you talk about how you see that relationship between money and fear?
Well, the men and women who work in the great financial institutions of the world have always said that what drives the market is fear and greed. And of course, you only have to look at anything about what's going on in the market, and that's what you see. And of course, it's fear, because we feel... We get frightened when we can't predict what's going to happen, but we suspect that what's going to happen isn't what we want. Something bad is going to happen to us. That's when we feel frightened. And of course, the markets are always changing. It's impossible to predict with any high degree of accuracy what's going to happen. And so in the big financial businesses, there's always this uncertainty. But then there's also the feeling that I can be lucky. I could make a lot of money. So there's always that feeling of greed.
Now you also say that fear breeds insecurity. That's why money was invented. What do you mean by that?
Well, it was invented as a way of trying to make trade more. Our species, human beings, apparently, from what the anthropologist tells us, have always traded. People who lived hundreds of miles apart still traded. I'm an Australian, as you said, and the Aboriginals in Australia, in that huge country, would travel hundreds of miles just to exchange something from their land with another tribe a long, long way away. And we know this from the various artifacts that have been found, and that goes back nearly 30,000 years. There's one theory about language, was that we actually developed language in order to be able to trade. But if you're just bartering objects, it's very difficult to get one object which you can see as being exactly of the same value as an object you might exchange for it. So having some kind of metaphor, some kind of representative of value, whether it's seashells or money, pieces of money, pieces of gold or pieces of paper, that money was useful in it gave us a better way of predicting what things were and being able to pin a value down. But then, of course, it's the values change because we can always see something as being more valuable or less valuable in respect to ourselves.
Now, you seem to be talking there about a sort of a generally agreed upon or a public meaning of money. Do we actually agree in the public realm on what money means?
We have to agree, first of all, in what constitutes money. And that often has arisen out of what's around. When countries like Australia and North America were being populated by white people. Well, if you look into the history of those three countries, you'll see all sorts of different things became money for a time because they were the only things that were available in the early history of the first settlement in Sydney. The money was not money but rum, and because that was a commodity which could be carried around and had some intrinsic value.
So extending that, can you talk about some more of the differences between attitudes towards money and, for instance, gambling amongst different cultures?
That's a very interesting question because in some cultures, gambling is seen very much as a way of life. I've not read any research papers on this, but my impression is that in the Chinese community, gambling is seen as not just simply being more acceptable, but it's what people do. When I've visited the casinos in Sydney and Melbourne, not to play, I can tell you, but just to go there, you'll see that in the large Chinese communities in Sydney and Melbourne, a lot of those people will go to the casino quite regularly. Australians, generally, are very keen on gambling, I think more than the British are. But we can put that to the test because some big casinos are going to be opened here in the UK, so we'll see about that.
That's very interesting that, yes, you mentioned not to play, of course. So what about the Americans? How do they, where does money fit into their world in broad sense?
Well, they developed capitalism and that money became very important. The British and Australians, I daren't speak for Canadians, but British and Australian people are very reluctant to talk about their own personal money. You can ask nowadays, you can ask your friends about their sex life and they'll tell you more than you ever want to know, but you can't say to them, what are you earning now, or have you got what's the size of your mortgage? It's a private matter. You don't talk about it, because if you talk about it, then other people will either despise you because you're poor, or they'll envy you, and envy's dangerous. But Americans talk more about what they're earning, but they might say what they're earning, but they don't always tell you what the size of their debts are. And of course, capitalism runs on debt, so that there are a lot of people who appear to be quite well off, but actually they're just all the time just working their debt, trying to keep themselves, keep their head above water, above the debt. But and then, of course, in the States, we've got a curious thing, certainly in the Bible Belt, about where many of the evangelical preachers will say that if you do what God wants you to do, He'll make you rich. Well, that isn't quite what Jesus taught, was it? of course, in all things, we select out what we want to hear and ignore the messages that we don't want to hear.
Those are very astute observations. Now, many people experience a great deal of misery and deprivation as a result of the way that money is disproportionately distributed amongst the rich and the poor in the world's economies. Do you think a better understanding of the meaning of money can contribute to shifting that in any way?
I think this is very important, because it's to understand that you've got an alternative in how you interpret your financial situation. Now, you could be very poor, and lots of people in many of the poor but religious countries, they interpret their poverty as being a trial, a burden which God has given them in order to allow them to deal with that burden, carry it, and then when they die, they'll go to heaven. It's a kind of storing up of riches in heaven. And then and quite a number of people interpret their poverty as evidence that they're not valuable as people. And then there are other people interpret their poverty in a political way and just say it's not fair and seek to revolt.
So what do you think that people can actually do to develop a true, a better understanding of the value of money and to align their ethical and social values with their relationships to money?
Well, I think this kind of wisdom has always been around, that you know, it's in the Bible, the love of money is the root of all evil. Not money is the root of all evil, but the love of it. And I think you'll find philosophers across every society and down the ages have pointed out that money is simply a tool. But if you make it your goal, you're going to be unhappy. That money is a tool that you can use in lots of ways to enrich your life, in the sense that you become more of the person that you could be. You develop full loving relationships with other people, that you're able to enjoy the beauties and the marvels of the world. You know, that's wisdom that's always been around, but a lot of people don't understand it.
Wow, that's quite extraordinary. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this evening in your terms. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Dorothy Rowe from her home in London, England. She's the author of The Real Meaning of Money and many other books, including Depression, The Way Out of Your Prison, which is now in its third edition.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.